This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. The pandemic forced Songbird's Guitar Museum in downtown Chattanooga to close the doors on its operations for good last summer, but now there are new plans for that space. Reed Caldwell is executive director of the Songbirds Foundation. Reed, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Tell us more about what's going on these days with the foundation.
In August, the Songbirds Guitar Museum, which was a separate organization, I know we have the same similar name, we're the Songbirds Foundation, they were the Songbirds Guitar Museum. Two separate organizations, we were sister organizations. The Guitar Museum closed its doors permanently in August and then donated all of the cabinetry and everything in the space, the stage and the lighting and the sound system. This is for the upstairs space at Songbirds at 35 Station Street. And we have been working to turn this into an educational and performing arts center since August, basically. We've been working with a design firm out of Cincinnati, Kramer Designs. We have an excellent design, and we are starting to fundraise and do our capital campaign right now. We've started doing some preliminary work. We built a new stage and some other stuff. But really what we're trying to do in the space is trying to create a more interactive experience for families and kids and adults. And really what we're trying to tell here is we're trying to tell how sound works. And we're using the guitar as a catalyst to tell that story. So when you walk in, there's an explanation of what sound is, talks a lot about how your hearing works and things like that. And then it gets into a little bit of the guts of the guitar history, the cultural significance of the guitar. Then it has a whole section that talks about how the guitar works. This is a STEM-based learning experience, so it's tons of science, technology, engineering, and math included in these exhibits. Basically, it's breaking down each component from the moment the sound goes in through the pickups, through the rig, through the pedals, through the amp, and out the amp, and then into your ear. So lots of great interactive displays where we talk about things like the impact of the wood that the guitar is made out of. And there's lots of blanks of different types of woods you can kind of pick up and feel like what a rosewood guitar would feel like, which is a very heavy wood. It would be a heavy guitar, probably cause some minor back problems after a while. Then there's like a display where we have an oscillator. We have a speaker that blows sound through a piece of pine, spruce, mahogany, Brazilian rosewood, or whatever. And then there's an oscillator on the opposite side that kind of shows how that sound wave is impacted by that type of wood. And we have a lot of discussion about why the wood is the way it is and why guitars are made out of these things and they're not made out of oak and stuff like that. Then we have displays that break down how pickups work. It's a lot of talk about magnets and polarity, some things you can physically do, like you can wind your own pickup there. You can wind the copper around the magnets. And there's a big, you know, big, huge 3D pickup that's broken down and you can kind of see the guts of it and how it works. A lot of discussion about, you know, there's little things you can pick up and talks about polarity of magnets and how the magnet actually directs the sound through the electronics and those things. There's amp display about how amps work and you can actually plug and play some things, kind of like build a little amp, definitely in a safe environment because amps are extremely dangerous to work on. You should not be working on your amp at home, by the way, if you don't know what you're doing. They're extremely dangerous. But, you know, this kind of walks you through a very safe way of like learning how an amp works. There's a thing about mic placement. There's these cool components that are working with companies like JHS pedals and things and Todd Sharp amps to build these displays where, you know, you've got an oscillator that shows you, you don't have like a whole row of distortions and things. And you can kind of see when you crank up the overdrive, what it does to the actual wave and why it does that. And then, of course, we have a section on Chattanooga music history. We'll have a rotating exhibit that'll rotate out every 3 to 4 months that'll be on different things. The first one we're talking about being on bluegrass, area bluegrass. But we're getting way off and branching out. We got an exhibit that we're talking about doing about punk music, really trying to kind of encapsulate some things that we haven't done in the past as Songbirds Guitar Museum. We're hoping to have some exhibits that are kind of tied around performances. So one of the ideas is to have a case, we're calling it a celebrity case, where, you know, maybe someone like Vince Gill or Joe Bonamassa or some great guitar player would come down and do a performance on the stage. They would choose 8 or 10 of our vintage guitars that we own. We still have about 300 vintage guitars in the space. Obviously, they'll not be the focus of the exhibits as much as they were, but they're still there, and we're hoping these artists will come down, pick 8 or 10 of them that they really liked, and they can tell a story about each one, about why they picked it, why it's important, They can play a song on it. We'll film that. It will go directly into that case, and you can kind of watch little clips of them talking about it during the show and things like that. So a lot more hands-on, interactive stuff where people are, this is really focused on families, kids, but we also have some stuff like this thing where this pedal power display that we're building with JHS is something that as a guitar player at 40 years old, like I am, I really want to play with this thing as soon as it's done. It's super cool. Very cool. We're hoping to really attract some folks with that, but also really kind of create a more family-friendly environment than we had. And so that's kind of where we are with the museum.
So what used to be the performing space and guitar museum, it will become a teaching space, an exhibition space, and also a space for artists to record.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea. You know, we're really focusing on it being it's a performance hall for one thing. We just built a brand new stage. The old space had a click together 4x4 stage that was great for, and you could move it, you know, if you had an event that needed that space, but we've taken that out. We put in this red oak stage. It's beautiful. And we're still going to be primarily focused on lots of concerts. We're hoping to bring back all the old favorites that we've had in the past. People like Steve Earle, and we just had so many great guitarists. We've had, you know, everyone from Jack Pearson to Kenny Vaughn. We've had great drummers. We've had all these super high end. We've had Oz Noy, John Five, who's Marilyn Manson's guitarist. We're hoping to have all these people, Sierra Hull, back again to play shows. You'll still be able to come in at night, buy a drink, and sit and watch a great show in a very close, intimate environment. But then we want to make sure that we also have an educational component where during the day a family can come in and they can really figure out how sound works. We also want to make the guitar more accessible to people. This exhibit that we're focusing on takes some of the stigma and pressure off the guitar, if that makes sense. You know, I think that you see all these people like these fantastic guitar players, and people have said, oh, you know, the guitar is not an accessible thing for me. I can't learn this because look at these people. I can never do that. And one of the things we're hoping to kind of for this display to kind of translate into is people being able to actually physically touch a bunch of stuff, plug a guitar in, play some stuff, get a real sense of, hey, I can do this. Maybe I'm 50 years old or 60 years old and I've never played guitar, but I go to see this exhibit. I find out that, hey, I can play a D chord pretty quickly. And we also have a display that started out as a joke with the designers. We had this thing called flubbing the F chord, which was a going joke with us, which is when we're teaching kids how to play guitar, one of the things they struggle with the most is the open position F chord, because you have to hold two strings down with one finger. And kids get to that point and they're like, oh, I'm never going to be able to play this F chord. It's so hard. And so we made this joke about calling it flubbing the F chord. And we decided to actually have a display about this, which is it's interviews we've done with people in the past talking about and interviews with people like John Five and Steve Earle and all these great musicians talking about the times that they were just like all these kids or these people who don't play guitar. You know, at one point in their life, they were a terrible guitar player or they didn't play guitar at all. And these interviews are basically them talking about some of the licks and things that they really struggled to learn. And we're trying to humanize these guitar gods, just to say the least, where people can kind of see, hey, I can do this. So we really want it to be a cool space, an educational space, but also people will hopefully they'll take away a knowledge of how music work, how amps work, but also really that deep-seated, I can do this. I can play guitar. Because we just know how important music is. And we know that people going to see live shows, you know, there's been a bunch of studies that say it releases endorphins that help your health and things like that. But we know that music does that as well. Playing guitar, even if you're not great, just sitting and playing guitar is a great stress reliever. And we hope that people take that away from this experience as well.
It's also a reboot for the model there. Performances will be part of this, but not in the same way that the previous version of Songbirds was so dependent upon performances and took such a hit once the pandemic settled in.
Yeah. You know, the pandemic is definitely something that we're concerned about. It has had some positive impact on us because we're not in a rush at this point. We're not in a rush to get this exhibit up. We have plenty of time. We've been working on it since last August to really research and make sure this is the right thing, that we're saying the right things and teaching the right things. So it's given us a little bit of a breathing room to kind of step back from everything, say, hey, here's some stuff from Songbirds Guitar Museum that was just amazing. And they did a lot of amazing stuff there. They had great shows. They had the player's experience where you could come and play guitars. They were a huge catalyst for the music scene. And we want to make sure that we continue those traditions that they started. Like, we want to make sure we have great shows. People can come. We will have players experience where people, if they want to come and play the vintage guitars, they're there. They can play them. There's places to see them. There will still be cool guitars. I know people were freaking out that there weren't going to be any guitars. As a person who's physically moved every single guitar in that space numerous times at this point, I can promise you that there is plenty of guitars. You will not be dissatisfied with the amount of guitars that are there. So we hope to continue a lot of those great traditions that those guys did. They did some amazing work there. But we also want to add that educational piece where we're really focusing on, hey, let's teach some science. Let's teach some engineering and math. And some technology really kind of encapsulated and told through the lens of the guitar. So that's kind of where we are right now. We hope that the pandemic is under control enough that sometime in September, we can open our doors and start having shows at least. Possibly we'll be able to do something before that. Maybe we'll have an outdoor concert or something in the summer. But we really want to make sure that we are, you know, being safe and that we are not being a catalyst for the pandemic and making it worse. We want to make sure that when we open that it's safe for people to come and sit and enjoy a show and not worry like, oh, am I gonna get sick here? And we want to make sure that we cover those things. So we're not in a rush. And right now we're just doing fundraising for this and we're starting to build some stuff. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook and see a lot of this progress as we've been posting pictures of the new stage and of the new guitar. I don't even know what to call it. This big, massive rack that we have in the vault that's full of guitars now. It's a 5-tier, holds 280 guitars rack. It's massive. Things like that. You can follow us on Instagram, at Songbirds Foundation on Instagram.
And beyond the social media platforms, if they want more information, where else can they go online?
So there's several things. You can go to songbirdsfoundation.org and you can find out all about our Guitars for Kids program. We're going to be revamping that website pretty soon to include the museum. It doesn't really have a lot of information on that right now, but it will soon. Best place to get up-to-the-minute updates about the museum space is Instagram and Facebook. Both of those are at Songbirds Foundation. You can also sign up for our e-newsletter. You can do that at songbirdsfoundation.org. We send out a monthly update about what's going on with pictures and things like that. We also will send out, at some point, we'll send out a fall concert schedule. Hopefully, we'll have some of the great people that everyone knows and loves come back around, play some shows. So we're excited to kind of get things back up and running, and hopefully we'll get some semblance of normalcy back in the near future.
All right, Reed, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
People who are ages 55 and older and looking to work have an opportunity to receive paid job training. Kimberly Kreider at Chattanooga Goodwill Industries runs the Senior Community Service Employment Program. Kimberly, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us more about this program.
The Senior Community Service Employment Program, we call it CSEP for short. It's a federally funded job training, and it's for older Americans, 55 and older, who have been out of the workforce and have to get back into the workforce. And typically it's people that have struggled financially. And so this provides them an opportunity to be able to beef up some of their skills to be able to get the job that they want. We like to tell people that we basically pay them to get the skills that they need to get the job that they want.
What skills do they learn and how do they learn them during this pandemic?
We have people sometimes that apply that have no degrees. We've had people that have applied that have 4 degrees and everything in between. And so depending on the skills that people want to get, we will do an assessment to try to figure out where the best spot is for them to get that training. During this time of pandemic, we are starting people at home. And we also are doing an assessment there too, because we have partnerships with local nonprofits and some national nonprofits, and they are providing opportunities for people to do training from home with them. Because typically we partner with nonprofit agencies and governmental agencies, and they get the skills and they get the training at those sites. And so we've been able to develop some partnerships with organizations that they're providing these virtual opportunities for people. So they're being able to learn some skills with Zoom. They're getting customer service. They're being able to work on the computer and doing work for some of these organizations. Those are some of the things that we're starting out with doing. And if it becomes safer for folks to transition back into an on-site location, then we're able to also look to see what partners do we have on the ground that people can transition back into an agency.
And this program, which is managed locally by yourself at Chattanooga Goodwill Industries, this program is the only federal job training program focused exclusively on helping older Americans return to the workforce at a time where long-term unemployment rates for
for people 55 and older are currently exceeding 40%.
And that's part of the reason why we want to get the word out to people. We know that there are many people that are over the age of 55 that are looking for work and they're competing. I mean, we've had so many people that have lost their jobs and everyone, they're competing for the same jobs. And so what we're trying to do is give people experiences where they can beef up their skills and make them more marketable as they compete for these jobs. And we know that there are seniors that are out there and we want to be an avenue to give them an open door so that they can come in, they can better their skills, then be able to get long-term employment.
Though you are based in Chattanooga, this program helps people not only in Chattanooga and Hamilton County, but in several counties around us.
The Senior Community Service Employment Program is a federal program that is across the entire United States. Someone is providing this service in a community for older adults. And we tell people that if they're not sure who it is, to contact their local American Job Center because we are a required partner with the Job Center. We cover within Chattanooga Goodwill, we cover six counties. So Hamilton, Bradley, McMinn, Mags, Ray, Polk, those are the counties that we cover. But if someone is listening outside of that area, if they contact their local American Job Center, they will help get them connected.
What have you heard so far from the people who have turned to you for help?
We've had people that have told us they don't know what they would do if it were not for CSEP because we've been able to provide that bridge during a time when some people, I think of one example of a lady that she worked for years for an insurance company, retired early and realized soon thereafter that she had made a mistake for her and financially she just was not able to swing things. And so she needed to find something. And because of CSEP, that helped her to be able to get this training so that when she was done with the training, she was able to get a job as a supervisor. And so it's been a lifesaver. It's been a lifesaver for many people. I think of one lady that she's one of our folks that works from home. And she has told me on numerous occasions, I don't know what I would have done during this pandemic had it not been for CSEP, because I'm able to get training and I'm able to receive pay so that I can pay my bills.
For people who want more information, where can they go online? Where can they call?
They can call Goodwill 629-2501, area code 423, and Carolyn Jenkins at extension 3080 will help. And then if you want to check out our website, you can go to goodwillchat.org.
All right, Kimberly, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ray, for having me.
Bessie's Front Porch features community members reading children's books to spur dialogue on race relations. The digital series from the Bessie Smith Cultural Center here in Chattanooga debuted last year, and it is back every day online throughout February for Black History Month. Here's Judge Curtis Collier reading Martin's Big Words, The Life of Martin Luther King Jr. by Doreen Rappaport.
Everywhere in Martin's hometown, he saw the signs, white only. His mother said these signs were in all southern cities and towns in the United States. Every time Martin read the words, he felt bad, until he remembered what his mother told him. You are as good as anyone. In church, Martin sang hymns. He read from the Bible. He listened to his father preach. These words made him feel good. When I grow up, I'm going to get big words too. Martin grew up. He became a minister like his father, and he used the big words he had heard as a child from his parents and from the Bible. Everyone can be great. He studied the teachings of Mahatma Gandhi. He learned how the Indian nation won freedom without ever firing a gun. Martin said love when others said hate. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. He said together when others said separate. He said peace when others said war. Sooner or later, all the people of the world will have to discover a way to live together. In 1955, on a cold December day in Montgomery, Alabama. Rosa Parks was coming home from work. A white man told her to get up from her seat on the bus so he could sit. She said no and was arrested. Montgomery's black citizens learned of her arrest. It made them angry. They decided not to ride the buses until they could sit anywhere they wanted. For 381 days, they walked to work and school and church. They walked in rain and cold and in blistering heat. Martin walked with them and talked with them and sang with them and prayed with them until the white city leaders had to agree they could sit anywhere they wanted. When history books are written, someone will say there lived black people who had the courage to stand up for their rights. In the next 10 years, black Americans all over the South protested for equal rights. Martin walked with them and talked with them and sang with them and prayed with them. White ministers told them to stop. Mayors and governors and police chiefs and judges ordered them to stop, but they kept on marching. Wait. For years, I've heard the word wait. We've waited more than 340 years for our rights. They were jailed and beaten and murdered, but they kept on marching. Some black Americans wanted to fight back with their fists. Martin convinced them not to by reminding them of the power of love. Love is the key to the problems of the world. Many white Southerners hated and feared Martin's words. A few threatened to kill him and his family. His house was bombed. His brother's house was bombed. But he refused to stop. Remember, if I am stopped, this movement will not be stopped, because God is with this movement. The marches continued. More and more Americans listened to Martin's words. He shared his dreams and filled them with hope. I have a dream that one day in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. After 10 years of protests, the lawmakers in Washington voted to end segregation. The white-only signs in the South came down. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. cared about all Americans. He cared about people all over the world. And people all over the world admired him. In 1964, he won the Nobel Peace Prize. He won it because he taught others to fight with words, not fists. Martin went wherever people needed help. In April 1968, he went to Memphis, Tennessee. He went to help the garbage collectors who were on strike. He walked with them and talked with them and sang with them and prayed with them. On his second day there, he was shot. He died. His big words are alive for us today. Martin Luther King should serve as an inspiration to all Americans, because he showed what it really, really means to stand up in the face of adversity and opposition, and what you're fighting for is right. And he did it in such a way that he did not provoke violence, answer violence. He did the exact opposite of it. He also did so in a very positive manner, productive manner. He showed people that there is a reason for hope. There's a reason to work for things and not to tear things down. Martin Luther King, a great man who used big words.
Watch the entire readings from Bessie's Front Porch on the Facebook page and YouTube channel for the Bessie Smith Cultural Center. Also, on Thursday, February 25th at 6 p.m., the BSEE will co-sponsor a Living History virtual class on Black troops in the Civil War. The Medal of Honor Heritage Center is another co-sponsor. Details on the virtual class at its website, mohhc.org/lectures. You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots, talking writing. Our guest is Eric Turner, a self-described acoustic singer and songwriter. E.T., as he's known to almost everyone, has also been a member of a number of different bands in which he's played keyboards as well as guitar. In his SoundCore bio, he says, "I sing, play guitar, bass, keys, looping pedals, and a little drums. Not all at the same time. That would be ridiculous." But as you'll hear, that hasn't stopped him trying. By way of introduction, this is a song E.T. wrote about growing up in Rossville, Georgia.
"Driving into my hometown, I see the houses on the hill. Almost like they're looking down on the streets that tried my will. On the boulevard of porn and shoes and the annual parade. It's where I learned of God and booze and the first time I got laid. Over there's the barber shop that used to cut my hair. And up the road's where life was at until it got unfair. I don't get by Mama's grave too much beside her on the hill. It's Papa Hood, it worked this town for the people and that mill. I wish that I'd known what I know now when I was growing up in Rossville. I'd probably make the same mistakes that I always did. Like a broken down old mill. This town has seen some better days. I've been away too long, but I'm back to finish a dream I had about writing down this song. Almost like an act of God that brought me back again. Back to the place I lost my way with years turned black as sin. When I hit it out, it was drugs and hate. There was never going back. I ran upstate to get away. Instead, my demons stacked. I spent years chasing pain. Replaced everything with drink. Took living dead to prove myself. I didn't know how to think. I wish that I'd known what I know now when I was growing up in Rossville. Make the same mistakes that I always did. It's like a broken down old mill. This town has seen some better days. I've been away too long, but I'm back to finish a dream I had about writing down this song. Are very different now. I've had some time for growing up. Fellowship my way to sanity, but somehow I am still messed up. It took twice the time I wasted to find out who's inside of me. I just wanna make my mama proud. I feel like she can see me while I'm here beside her grave. Ain't ashamed of where I come from. Sometimes in the dreams I have about writing down this song. Wasted to find out who's inside of me. Now I just wanna make my family proud when they look down on me.
Our guest, Eric Turner, E.T., and his wife decided rather than have children, they would have dogs. It was the loss of one of his dogs, in fact, that prompted E.T. to stop writing songs in the last year about the challenges of living in the pandemic. So at what point did you stop writing songs specifically about living in the pandemic?
I think probably the last couple of songs that I've written were kind of after we lost Chase, our dog. And that kind of, it focused me on a different kind of heartbreak, I guess, if you will. You know, so it was, you know, it kind of compounded it. So when we lost Joey, it was 2 years ago, March 13th. And when we lost him, I dealt with my grieving of losing him by going out, going to shows. I was going out every night, staying out late, sleeping, getting up, doing what I had to do, whatever responsibilities, and then leaving the house again. And you just can't escape this time. She passed this past November. So it was like I had to grieve in a whole different way. So, and I don't do well with death. I try to, not like I try to avoid it or avoid thinking about it or dealing with it. But I prefer to deal with it later instead of just head on, you know, just always been that type of person. So I had to really deal with her passing head on, and it kind of took away the, oh, poor me, I'm stuck at home in isolation, to, oh, poor me, my best friend's gone, you know? So I guess pretty much every song that I wrote up until, four or five songs that I wrote up until she passed, they all had something to do with either being stuck at home or missing what I was missing out on, you know?
It just occurred to me that in some ways, the arc of the pandemic is a bit like the grieving process. I think we probably all entered the pandemic the same way you enter grieving, denial, and then the rest of those stages that they've identified, you know?
Yeah.
I think in some ways we've all grieved over the last year for in addition to the loss that you're talking about, the sort of greater loss that we all share.
Life, you know? As we know it.
Yeah. You know? It's kind of hard not to write about that, I guess.
Yeah, of course. I mean, because if you're like me anyway, that's how I deal with my feelings. Mm. You know, I even with grief, you know, or dismay, or being overjoyed about something, you know, I'll write a song about it. And luckily, I had that kind of outlet during all this. There's a lot of people that have zero outlets. All that their outlet is Netflix, you know, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not a true, I wouldn't be able to get out what I needed to get out in that way. You know, I have to put it into words and song, as far as trying to put the feeling into it, trying to create something where somebody can identify with what I'm going through, you know, because I think in the end, when I write a song, it's for me, but I want somebody to identify it. No, not so that they can be like, oh, I identify with you. You're great. You did this for me. But more so that if somebody hears a song, they identify with it and it helps them the way that it has helped me to write it, you know? Like I've got a song that I rarely perform live that is about losing my mother. And the reason I don't perform it live, there's two. One main reason is I usually get very emotional when I play it, even if I prepare myself. Two, people in the audience get very emotional when I play it. And there's nothing like looking out into the audience and seeing that you're making somebody cry. And it's not a cry. It's not a joyous cry. They're missing their mom or whoever they're missing. That, I've had people come up to me after playing that song and just, it's a great feeling to know that somebody can identify with it, but it's heartbreaking to know that somebody has to identify with it, you know? But that's, you know, I think that's why I write. I get the things out, and then, you know, hopefully the reason that I share what I write is that somebody else will hear it and be like, oh, well, that kind of makes me feel better about this, that I'm not alone in this, or maybe there's some kind of answer to something in there or something. But yeah, it's the only way I know how to deal with stuff like this, especially a pandemic. I mean, the pandemic took away not just the way that I made a living, you know, but it took away my social life, you know. And I'm a pretty social person. I'm a social introvert, you know, if that makes any sense.
Well, how does that play out? You prefer to socialize in small groups?
I really can socialize with anybody, you know. I don't really think that I'm like better or think in a different way than other people, but I just, there's very few people that I can actually talk to. You know, I can have a good time with anybody. I can fit in anywhere. I can hide my social anxieties and just walk up and talk to people, you know, and all that. But at the same time, I'm like, there's nothing for me here. You know, sometimes I'll be having a great time and I'll be just like, I'm going to go home because this is boring. You know, there's nothing really happening, you know, other than people, especially since I stopped drinking. You know, the real challenge is when you're out and somebody's having a really good time and you're loving that they're having a really good time, but you can't understand what the hell they're talking about, you know? And you're just like, please stop talking to me so close, you know? But anyway, that's...
Well, it's interesting that you feel that way, and yet when you write these songs, you're delving deep inside yourself to write these songs.
Yeah. Well, that's a good observation, because I haven't really thought about it too much in the way that it's not easy. It would not be easy for me to just tell people that mm-hmm. I'm feeling these ways, mm-hmm. you know? So I guess in that respect, yeah, it is kind of odd that I'm putting things into song that I really wouldn't feel comfortable about talking with a lot of people about, or feel comfortable that people would understand where I'm coming from. It's amazing how music just levels the playing field, you know, and puts everybody kind of on the same plane.
Care to share a couple of songs?
Yeah, sure. I'll play you the latest song that I've written. This one's kind of a song about looking in the mirror and deciding that you're going to be unstoppable, and despite all the failures. You know, we were just talking before we started recording about how important failure is in the process, you know. How much more of a sign do you need than getting knocked back down to your knees? How will I overcome these troubles that have troubled in me? Don't wanna be here, just lying down, giving up and a following frown. Don't have the confidence to even have a night on the town. Standing tall, even when facing down the enemy lives in me now. I wasn't able to see fighter in me till I believe unstoppability. Passing on, for it's all that is gone.
in getting back up off your knees. Get up and overcome these troubles that trouble me. Don't wanna go back to just lying down. Reaching long ain't no quitting me now. I've got the confidence to have myself a night on the town. Standing tall even when facing down. The enemy that we fight is called doubt. Say it again, ain't no quitting me now. I believe in unstoppability.
Play solo? That sounds like a song that would be played by a band.
A lot of the stuff that I write with in the back of my mind, I hear the band playing along. But yeah, most everything that I play is acoustic solo.
Yeah. But you've been in a band before.
Yeah. Generally, when I'm in a band, I play a different instrument than my main instrument. Like the last two bands I've been in, I played bass. A current band that I'm in that... we've only practiced a couple times, like three times because of the pandemic, but Bastronaut, I play keys in that, and that's something I have the ability to do, but I don't play keyboards very often.
Guitar. Do you sing with the band?
No, not at all. Yeah, well,
how could somebody bring you into a band and not have you sing?
Well, if you heard this band, you would totally understand.
Why, the guy that sings, has got that good a voice?
No, he's great, but it's more of a... it's not really even like a screaming type of deal, even though he does, and it's not really like a growling type of deal. It's kind of like, I don't know if you know Faith No More, Mr. Bungle, the Mike Patton-ish kind of singing where, you know, you could be singing real smooth at one time and then, blah, 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 you know. But yeah, it's, check it out, Bastronaut. Whenever things come back around, we're playing shows again, we're definitely going to be out. It's a good time. I call it circus metal. You know, because it's kind of circusy. It's really metal, but it's got a funky element to it, and it's not a. I think it's something that everybody can enjoy, unless you're only into classical music or something. Then you definitely wouldn't enjoy it.
But for you, that's making music a whole different way, right? That's not expressing how you're feeling in terms of your lyrics
for me,
and so on.
Right. It's just fun. It's just me having fun. You know, and I welcome that. You know, I mean, I'm serious about being in the band. I love the band. I love the guys. I like what they're doing. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in it. But especially with this one, it has given me a lot. Well, number one, it's really challenging. It's something that I haven't done in a long time. Keyboards is not something that up until I joined the band, that I'd even practiced in years. You know, I had keyboards there, but it was more for playing stuff, looping it, playing along to it, you know. But it's been really challenging, but it's a lot of fun. And it's a lot less responsibility, too. You can, if and when we play live shows, you know, I'm going to actually be able to get up there and have fun and just do my thing instead of
I'm with you.
Being like, oh, don't forget these lyrics, you know.
Yeah. What are the keys that you play? Is it piano or an organ?
Piano. Really, it's a keyboard, but mostly what I am playing is an organ sound, you know, or some kind of synthesizer sound or whatever. There's a little bit of piano sound in there, but that's one of the things. I'm actually, in one of the songs, I'm playing two different keyboards. And for me, for a keyboard player, it's not that big a deal. And the stuff that I'm playing is very, anybody who plays keyboards could pick it up very, very easily. Mm. But for me, like I play by ear, so I can't read music. So I have to learn things as they are. And generally, if you show me how to do something, I'll just learn it that way, and then it's in there forever, you know, after practicing, of course. But yeah, it's been challenging, like I said, but it's I look forward to playing the shows because it's really going to be let it all hang out, just have fun.
It will be the first time you play, I'm sure.
I'm not playing the most technical parts of the stuff, so if I screw up, it's not going to be as glaring a screw up as if the guitar player screws up, you know.
So you're playing two different keyboards, one with your left hand, one with your right hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that anything like playing the guitar where you play with your left hand and your right hand, you're thinking about two different things?
It is.
To create one sound.
It is like that, but and I thought that would kind of help me because this particular song, I was like, there's two different keyboards playing at the same time. He's like, well, you don't have to really worry about that. This is the main part we want you to play. But in my head, I'm like, well, it sounds like that on the recording, and it would really sound good to be playing both. So I kind of forced myself to learn both. But with the guitar, I'm only fingering chords with one hand. I'm just strumming with the other. With the keyboards, you're fingering chords with both hands. And my brain, it more operates in the guitar area. So it was a little different. But yes, it is sort of the same, doing two different things with two different hands. But just in a different way. It's like playing drums. I play a little bit of drums too. And I actually have had me and the singer from the Unsatisfied, Eric Skelf, we had a little project called Jeet, J-E-E-T. It was both of our initials put together, but it was a two-person thing. He was singing, and he would play a little bit of guitar, which was outside of what most people see from him. But I was playing keyboards. I was running it through a looper, so we would have beats. I would play keyboards. One song, I played keyboards, bass, and guitar on the same song. Like, I would just switch instruments out and stuff, and it became just work. You know what I mean? Like, I love the music we were creating, and it was very creative stuff. It was, but it was just work. I got to where I didn't really enjoy it because it was like the whole time, instead of being able to feel the music and get into it, I was like, I have to remember to push this button this time.
We're running out of time, and I'd like for you to do at least one more song.
Okay. I'm going to do this one. This is called Tao of Chase. We were talking earlier about balance being a part of life, and this is one of the hardest things, losing my dog, that I'd ever been through. Every time it happens, it's one of the hardest things I've been through, you know. But anyway, this is called Tao of Chase. Let go. Just don't know how to. Didn't want to see you go. But I don't get to choose who I keep and who I lose. Now something waves with undertow. Whoa, whoa, whoa. It breaks me at the knees. I just wish it wasn't so. Friends and memories and words I won't say. Kill or comfort me on my hardest days. But I don't get to choose who I keep and who I lose. No, we don't get to choose. Keeping who we lose.
Eric Turner. He'll be playing and singing as soon as the opportunities arise again. He'll also be playing keyboards with Bastronaut, and his wife has been learning to play drums. He thinks it's just a matter of time before she'll be ready to begin playing gigs in town with him. Everyone is waiting, poised for the end of the pandemic. This is Scenic Roots, talking writing.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.